I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. You're listening to the Brandenburg Concerto No. 4-1 by J.S. Bach, performed by Kevin MacLeod. It seems, you know, like fitting music to the time period we're going to be talking about soon in Miss Bennett, Christmas at Pemberley. Marissa Wolf, Artistic Director of Portland Center Stage at the Armory, joins me today to talk about Miss Bennett, which she directed. We'll also find out about the Tony Award-winning musical Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Both shows are unusual holiday offerings and productions that feature racially diverse casts. For more about both productions, stay tuned, because this is Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. With me in the KBOO studio is Artistic Director Marissa Wolf of Portland Center Stage at the Armory. Welcome to Stage and Studio.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
I can't believe this has taken me this long to, you know, to meet you. But, you know, this is your second season at Portland Center Stage.
Yes, yes. Although the first season that I've had the opportunity to program myself. So, you know, been here about a year and a few months. And
so this is actually your official season
that
you've
right.
chosen.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's thrilling.
And that's interesting, because the programming does seem different. And we're going to talk about that a little bit. It's good. I've really liked the programming so far. Before you came to Portland, you were Associate Artistic Director and New Works Director at Kansas City Repertory Theater and Artistic Director of Crowded Fire Theater in San Francisco. You have a degree from Vassar. Oh, my gosh. And studied at RADA, the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts in London. So, big credits there. What made you decide to run a company in Portland?
You know, this is such an exciting moment in the American theater field. We are in a sea change. There's a generational shift happening. And so many of the longtime artistic directors and leaders in our field are moving on, are retiring. And so it's opened up this incredible moment and had a major ripple effect. So in the 75 largest theaters in the country, called the League of Regional Theaters, of which Portland Center Stage is one, over the last 2 years, we've had about 20 artistic director openings. And that is exceptional. You know, in the past, it's been one every 2 or 3 years.
That's interesting. So people are retiring. I mean, Che Yu of Victory Gardens just announced his retirement.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, and for Che, I think it's interesting. It's like it's a combination of retirement and then also
He made big changes, too.
Yeah. I think Che will go on to be explosive, like, directing career. And I hope that we'll get him back here as a director and playwright. But
That's big news.
Yeah, in the future. But so I feel very lucky that I have been coming up in this world when this major sort of field change was happening.
And also just the, you know, the inclusion of women as artistic leaders has been, you know, a very vocal movement the last couple of years.
That's right. And I feel really proud of being part of a cohort of new artistic leaders across the country, including Nataki Garrett here in Oregon at Oregon Shakespeare Festival, of both more female...
And that was a big moment,
that's
too.
That's right. Huge. So thrilling. More female artistic directors and more artistic directors of color. There's still so much work to do, and it is still... the artistic director positions are still dominated by white men, but it's a wonderful moment to be part of, and
but it's slowly changing.
It's slowly changing.
At least there's a change in the air.
That's right. That's right. And you can see that across the country. And I'm so thrilled to be in Portland at this incredible theater company.
Well, and I think it really happens from the top down too, doesn't it? You know, because then it's reflected in casting choices, and that's reflected in the rest of the staffing and just all across the board, and hopefully in the audiences.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is my big thing.
Yes.
You know, let's get the audiences there of color, too.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yes.
So it sounds like you've settled into your role at Portland, you know, center stage quite nicely.
Yes, it's been great. It's been a great year of coming to know, a sort of deep dive, coming to know this community, listening deeply. My first 4 months to year, really, my first year was a listening tour in many ways. I've had the opportunity to sit down one-on-one with over 100 artists in our community.
Really? Oh, wow.
And I still do that every couple of weeks. I just... I will, whoever has reached out to me saying they'd like to talk, I always
say yes.
You make
yourself available.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's a big change too, I think.
It's such an awesome way to connect to the work that's already happening here and think about ways in which we as the big Lort Theater are in dialogue with all of the artists and all of the shows and productions and conversations happening.
You've made yourself approachable.
Mm-hmm.
That's really great to hear. And also, you've settled into Portland. How do you like it?
I love Portland. It's been wonderful.
Did you know much about Portland before you came?
You know, because I had spent 10 years in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I have family in Seattle who I would visit all the time.
Sure,
so Portland,
it was on the way.
Exactly. Yeah. I've stopped through, but I haven't spent a significant amount of time here before, so it's definitely an adopted home for me and my family, and we love it. We love it. We love the coziness of the fog. You know, we love the sort of richness of the culture here, and we love just being back on the West Coast, and it suits our sort of ethos of how we move through the world.
Yeah, and also you're kind of centrally located, go either north or south.
That's right. It's great.
And so that's great that you're finding your way in Portland. What's some of the major challenges you face, though? What would you say some of the, you know, major challenges in your role as artistic mm-hmm. director?
You know, I think one thing is that with institutional leadership changes, just necessarily come challenges that include this interesting thing that I know all new artistic directors have to kind of wrestle with, which is that when you've got someone leaving, like Chris Coleman, who had such a major, powerful
and
imprint.
And who was here for, what, over
18 years.
Yeah.
Such a powerful imprint on not only the community, but on the theater, really built the theater in so many ways and built the gorgeous Armory building. So that Chris, so great, graciously helped me sort of in my transition and connect to the theater and the community from afar, because he was already in Denver when I got here. But really what happens is that you know, any new leader, including myself, I take up space in a different way than
right.
Chris. And my shape is different when I plug myself into the whole of the structure. And therefore, there are so many things that happen both on a tiny micro scale and on a macro scale that you have to sort of encounter and wrestle with, from sort of like, oh, like these systems, there are systems in place that are new to me, and sort of asking the questions of how do they come to be this way? And also just the interesting and rich challenges of a new dynamic with a board. You know, the board that had had so much trust and currency with Chris over those decades, and a sort of path forward for future with this board, who has been very supportive of me. But it comes with deep challenges, I think. And for me, I'm so thrilled to have be on this end of my first year, you know, to have really encountered so many of those moments and questions and complicated happenings in the first year, and now to feel more like I have a greater understanding of where we're going.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, especially a director who becomes artistic director often finds another challenge is balancing that admin side, the administration
sure.
side, with your artistic side. I find that can be, you know, very cumbersome.
Yeah.
You know, either way. Yeah.
Yes.
How have you balanced that?
You know, it's so interesting because my career, I have spent also working inside of theaters. And so as I've built my body of work as a director, so too have I been building my work as an artistic leader. So they've always gone hand in hand, and they've always been difficult. you know, the thing I love about being an artistic director, and I had experienced this when I was running Crowded Fire, which is an indie new play company in San Francisco, is that you get to put your money where your mouth is. You get to say, this is what is exciting. This is what, this is how we get to lead the field and be at the forefront of where we're going as a field. This is how we share our values inside this region. And it does require a particular dance when you're actually in the rehearsal room, and also in tech and previews, that I would like to think that over the years I have become more judicious in how I shape my time.
And those hats that you have to
that's
wear.
Right, that's yeah. right. But it's never easy, you know. Miss Bennett was my first project here as the artistic director and director. And
so this is the first show you've actually directed?
Yes, at Portland Center
wow.
Stage. Yeah. And it was a so powerful in many ways to have the opportunity to work with all of the production teams as a director and sort of really understand on a even deeper level like the talent that we have on staff and how all of that talent rises to make the productions happen. And I essentially what it meant is that my first 3 weeks when I was rehearsing, you know, every morning is filled with staff meetings, and then I would rehearse from 11 to 5 p.m., and then I would hop on my bike and get home for dinner, bath, and bedtime with my kid, and then every night I would need to work for a few more hours
at
least.
That's a lot of juggling.
The thing that's tricky, and but I'm proud of myself for, is that I did have to cut out any other social obligations or shows just for that time. Because when I'm not directing, I do try to see, I love seeing other people's work once a week. I try to go out. But I understood that in order to stay on top of this juggle, I really needed to.
I think that's what a lot of people don't understand, especially with women, you know, and you've got mm-hmm. family mm-hmm. and, you know, that you do, something has to go. And often mm-hmm. it's that, you know, let's ladies who lunch or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. it's often that kind of thing that you just don't do as much. Of,
right.
You know,
that's exactly right. Yes. Yeah. And the nice thing about shows, as you know, is that they're finite. You know, so there's always a sort of, you're deep inside the work. It's exciting. It's energizing. And then there's an end to it where you think, okay, and then I will slowly turn into a human again.
Yeah. Well, you are definitely that. A very strong human here. If you just joined us, I'm Dimae Roberts, Stage and Studio, talking with Marissa Wolf, Artistic Director of Portland Center Stage at the Armory. If you've missed any of this show, I'll have it online at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. And Marissa, we've been talking about, this is your first show directing at Portland Center Stage, Miss Bennett, Christmas at Pemberley by Lauren Gunderson and Margot Melkon. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a reimagining of Pride and Prejudice. Of course, everybody loves that novel, right?
Yes.
Jane Austen. I mean, it's a sure winner. But this time, the most neglected sister, Mary, you know, who's usually just playing the piano. And, you
right.
know, I always felt sorry for Mary.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you doing
Poor
to Mary?
Mary?
She's always like, you know, at every party, she has to play the piano. But she finally gets to have her love story told. Tell us more about the story itself.
You know, it's such a smart spinoff of Jane Austen. So I happen to be someone who loves Jane Austen and has been reading her work since the time I was very young. And so it sits right in that sort of Austen canon of like female-centered narratives in which women are doing extraordinary things within a very restricted society. They're deeply intellectual, filled with independence and energy. And so Gunderson...
You must be a Jane Austen fan.
I am. And I do really value also Austen as a social critic
yes,
of her time.
Yes,
really calling out ways in which women were sort of trapped into marriages and also the sort of hypocrisy of society at that time. And then I think Lauren Gunderson, who's a playwright I have worked with for years and actually was able to, in my tenure at Crowded Fire, commission and produce some of her early work.
She's like the most produced playwright,
yes,
isn't it, right
yes,
now?
Yes, for years running. Yeah, She's been one of the top most produced playwrights in the country. And I love Gunderson's work because she's also very women-centered. She's often looking at stories about women scientists or women in history, sort of women's lives, and partnering with Margot Melkon, who... has been a literary manager and dramaturg.
Okay.
The two of them together create such a tight, smart, witty script. And so it's been a joy bringing this play to life. I would say that you don't have to love Austen to love this show. For those who don't know Austen at all, the characters are born fully formed on stage.
It's its own story.
It's totally its own story. And it's very playful and has a bunch of winks to the audience.
And I bet you it's pretty witty writing, too.
I'm looking
forward to seeing it. I haven't seen it yet.
It's such smart and witty writing. If you love Austen, there are going to be a bunch of little Easter eggs for you inside this play. Just one wonderful sort of jokes based on Pride and Prejudice. But essentially, just as you say, the play centers around Mary, the wallflower sister, and her day in the sun. One thing I really love and value about this script and this production is that Mary is, it's not an ugly duckling story. It's not like, oh, Mary becomes one of the cool sisters and then finds love, the end. It's actually about Mary sort of like that when we met her in Pride and Prejudice, she was not very good at the piano and she was very tactless.
But he still kept making her play it.
Exactly, exactly. But in this play, it takes place 2 years after the novel ends. She's had nothing but time to practice the piano. So she's a virtuosic piano player. She's very well read. Awesome. She's brilliant. And she's stubborn and she doesn't have an ear for social etiquette. That's not in her wheelhouse. And so she's living her full life. She is utterly herself from the beginning of the play to the end of the play. And in a way, this is a love story about her finding someone who is also a whole person and sees her for who she is. And she sort of demands of the world around her and her family to see her for who she is.
And you've cast it racially diverse, mm-hmm. which I love, you know. Do you think that Austin, you know, there have been quite a few Austin adaptations mm-hmm. for the stage. Do you think that, that classic status is moving it towards being able to do more open casting as in Shakespeare, right?
Absolutely.
We now expect it.
I think so. It's such a important question. One thing is that these writers say on the title page with the characters, they write, please cast this in as diversely
as
possible.
And I like it when playwrights do that.
That's right. That they call it out and they say Austin is for everyone. And that feels really important that they do that and that you honor that intention. You know, there's another thing, which is essentially, just as you say, just like Shakespeare, I personally think that it is our job as theater makers to make every play feel relevant and to ask the question, why this play now? And so for that reason, it feels like really exciting to have a cast on stage who looks like our society now.
Because that also helps the audience. You know,
absolutely.
And to see yourself being reflected.
Exactly.
You know,
it makes
on
it,
the stage.
That's right. It makes it much more vital, relevant, exciting. I have this funny feeling about, the representation of families on stage. Mm. Because here we are, you know, we're in 2019, almost 2020.
I know. I can't believe it's almost 2020.
I know. And families look all kinds of different ways. There is no one way in
exactly.
that families look. And so that feels really important to celebrate that on stage as well, that we've got four sisters in this play who look utterly different from each other, and they look like a perfect family. And they are, in my mind, they are so relatable. I mean, these actors are just, they do an incredible job both finding the bonds of love between them and also that you feel like you might have walked into your own family festivities with all the tension and struggles between them.
I like what you said about blended families because as somebody who grew up as the only interracial family in a small town in Oregon, you know, I've felt that way for a long time and never see that reflected until recently. So kudos to that. And I also want to give a shout out to the casting of Lauren Modica, who is starring as a leading lady as Mary Bennett. And this is her first leading lady role, and she is so deserving. I'm surprised it's taken this long.
Yes.
You know?
I am beyond thrilled to be working with Lauren Modica
in
this
role. She is so super talented.
Yes, she is. And I have been a fan of hers from the moment I got here in watching her both in Twist Your Dickens and Sense
amazing.
And Sensibility. Yes, both at PCS.
Yeah.
And I know she's truly like a favorite of this Portland region. People know her, love her work, have seen her at OSF. And so in a way, there's something so exciting about having an actor who from the moment she steps on stage, the audience is with her.
Oh, yeah.
And she, you know, Lauren brings such a powerful connection to this role. She lives inside it, both lives the humor fully with all the physical humor and all the textual humor, but also she has a gorgeous way of dropping into the heart. And it feels so alive and arresting. And it really lands the love story with her partner on stage, Josh Weinstein. Yeah. The two of them together are an incredible pair.
I'm very excited to see this. Miss Bennett, Christmas at Pemberley, a Jane Austen-inspired comedy by Lauren Gunderson and Margot Melkon, is directed by Marissa Wolfe. The show runs through December 29th at Portland Center Stage. Tickets are available at pcs.org Tuesday through Sunday evenings at 7:30 p.m., Saturday and Sunday matinees at 2 p.m. and, you know, most of these days, and most Thursday matinees at 11 a.m. There will be a 2 p.m. performance on Tuesday, December 24th, Christmas Eve. That's what I was trying to get to.
Right.
And that's kind of an interesting way to spend
exactly.
Christmas Eve. And the show is recommended for ages 10 and up, and you can learn more about accessibility options at pcs.org/access. And I have all that info at stageandstudio.org and kbu.fm/stageandstudio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, visiting with Marissa Wolfe, Artistic Director of Portland Center Stage at the Armory. And another show that's opening, I want to get this in, at the end of December, is the Tony Award-winning rock musical Hedwig and the Angry Inch. It's a part concert, part angry comedy about Hedwig, a singer in a band, and Hedwig's music is stolen from a mentee. And the play is about, setting the record straight. So tell us more. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen the film, but it was incredible. Tell us more about the show. What makes it so popular? It had a cult following for a long time.
I know, and that's true in Portland as well. Yeah. You know, there's been fantastic productions here, a rich history in this community, and it's an amazing and exciting thing to get to do, really, what is a cult classic. I think that the opportunity for Chip Miller, who's the associate producer at Portland Center Stage, to direct it, is that his way in is so thoughtful. He's a real musical theater nerd, and so he has always an incredible approach to musical works. And he is thinking about this in terms of, again, this question we bring to the fore, which is, why this play now? Why this cult musical now? Why does it matter? And as he sort of listened into the questions this musical asks, he was thinking about the way we use trauma, the way we use comedy and humor as a tool to deal with trauma.
Right.
And so Hedwig's journey, she is from Eastern Europe and sort of seeking freedom and the ability to live her life in the U.S. And she goes through a surgery that ends up really hurting her and having to sort of live her life in the U.S.
Transitional surgery?
Well,
gender?
It's funny because our language that we use now to talk about is not, it's a little bit difficult to apply to this musical that was written decades ago. But yes, essentially, Hedwig herself is not keen on having any kind of surgery done to her body, but that in the premise is that she won't be able to get out of East Berlin without some kind of gender surgery. And so and then has to sort of suffer the consequence of
something that didn't go
of
well.
Surgery that goes badly. And so as she's sort of dealing with that trauma, she comes to the U.S. to find, also to like make her name as a rock star. And really we're meeting her on her tour. And she's playing in a grungy, in fact, this Chip's production is set sort of in an abandoned Chili's, like at a mall in Portland. It's fabulous. It's grungy.
Oh, so you've done some different changes to it. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. You've set it in Portland.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Right. Or Chip has set
yes,
it in Portland.
Yes. Yeah. And he's also looking at it through because it's really a punk rock show, he's looking at it through Afropunk lens.
So it sounds like it's been updated.
Yes. I would say that very gently, but so many updates one can do simply with the production design and casting choices and like the way one handles language and content. So the show is, I think, going to be with DJ Curtis, who's an incredible actor, an amazing singer, and Ithaca Tell.
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad to hear that
incredible.
Another Portland favorite.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Was cast.
The two of them, I think, will just bring down the house. You know, that it's filled with humor. It's biting and vicious. And a real celebration of life inside a look at how one carries and deals with trauma.
Yeah, and it's also a racially diverse cast mm-hmm. in this one as well. And it's beginning with previews. I think it's interesting. At the end of the month leading up to preview shows during even up to New Year's Eve and day. So it's an unusual way to spend New Year's time. You
Absolutely,
know?
Yes.
And I think a lot of people would like that because it is a rock musical.
I agree. Know? And if you want to get you can get a little like, you know, sweet coziness, like joy and laughter upstairs in the, you know, with Miss Bennett, and then come downstairs for a little bit of rock and roll and kind of, you
close
know,
the evening out
vicious,
that way.
Sexy
See
humor.
The matinee, yeah. Close with the evening show.
Exactly.
And it's in the Ellen By, so is it
That's
set
right.
up kind of more cabaret-like?
That's or? A great question. Yeah, so yeah. It's an end stage, meaning the audience is raked, looking down at the space, and about 25 seats are on the stage.
Wow.
And so are in the, that is sort of Hedwig's audience in, okay. in this abandoned Chili's, is that about 25 people per night would be at
in
tables.
In a booth? Oh, okay.
Yeah. and she'll really be interacting with them.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
It will be fun.
Well, it sounds really incredible. It's an unusual choice for a holiday time show, but a fun way to kick off the new year. Portland Center Stage at the Armory presents previews of Hedwig and the Angry Inch, December 28th, 29th, and 31st, and January 1st and the 2nd at 7:30 p.m. It's kicking off the new year by yeah. Friday, January 3rd, which is the opening mm-hmm. at 7:30 and runs through February 23rd, and shows are... That's a long run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wow. And shows are Tuesday through Sunday evenings at 7:30 p.m. with Saturday and Sunday matinees most days at 2 p.m. and also Thursday matinees most days at 11 a.m. And for that might be a hard show to do at 11 a.m. I was just thinking about that as an actor. You know?
Totally.
I get up early and sing rock. Okay. for tickets and more info, visit pcs.org. And it sounds like, you know, you're really off to a great start for the new year.
Thank you.
Especially
yes.
with this show.
Yes, I'm excited.
Or these two shows.
I
yeah.
think it's a great way to bring like light and joy and politics and relevance to the 2020 start of the year.
Well, we have like 1 minute left. I just want to commend you for bringing more efforts to hire local actors at Portland Center Stage, you know.
It's been
Especially
a joy.
Of color, so
what a
I'm
talented
really
community we have. Like it's
That's
really
good to hear.
It's exciting to see work and then get to bring folks in.
Any final words?
I'm thrilled to be here, and I can't wait to talk more soon.
You will be back. I am sure of that. So, Marissa Wolf, Artistic Director of Portland Center Stage at the Armory, it's been such a pleasure to meet you and to talk with you and spend some time with you.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's great to just get to know you. You can check out both Miss Bennett, Christmas at Pemberley, and Hedwig and the Angry Inch at pcs.org. That's it for Stage and Studio. We're going to go out with a song from the film of Hedwig. It's Wig in a Box, sung by John C. Mitchell. Sounds beautiful, actually. I'll have this show online at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio later today. You can like us also on facebook.com/stageandstudio. Till next time, I'm Dime Roberts.
Cross the trailer park. I get down. I feel hot. Feel on. Verge of going mad, and then it's time to punch the clock. I put on some makeup, turn on the tape deck, and put the wig back on.